this passage of Matthew is kind of a potpourri of sayings, as it's just, they're kind of loosely connected here. And I've been trying to figure out the best way to get to them, and just reading from Jeremiah and Romans. And I thought of a line, I'm pretty sure, from G.K. Chesterton, who was a well-known writer and apologist, convert to Catholicism in England, and a big apologist for the church. And he was, in one of his books, talking about the resurrection. You know, there's a kind of cliche among Christians about belief in the resurrection. He said, Chesterton's suggestion was this: when you get something familiar like that, you ought to look at it, and look at it, and think about it, and look at it, and think about it, until it begins to look weird and unlikely. And then, he said, you're in a fair way to getting to what this is supposed to be all about, at least to make a fair start on it. So I thought, here's all this lovely language about sparrows and hairs being numbered and all this other wonderful stuff, and don't be afraid. And, you know, that sage religious rhetoric, you know, holy card talk, bumper sticker talk. So I suggested to myself and to you now that we look carefully at these things and try to move them beyond the status of cliches. Fear no one. Fear no one. I mean, you just think about that. That's pretty astonishing. I mean, that's weird. That's as implausible as anything can be. I mean, it's not love that makes the world really go around. It's fear. You know? At least at a certain level, at a certain obvious level. That novel of Joseph Heller, where it begins in the first line, I live in an office where 10 people are afraid of the 10 people ahead of them. And those 10 people are afraid of the 10 people ahead of them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And everybody recognizes that. The problem is, though, that it's so close to us as our own skin, that we can't imagine, I can't at least, a fear-free existence. And I'm much more concerned about the falling in the stock market and the devaluation of my RRSP than somebody who can kill my soul, frankly. And as to the hairs of my head being numbered, and me being worth the many sparrows, it's a beautiful poetic thought. But then I look at my life and say, am I known? Am I aware of being known with that kind of intimacy? And that kind of care? And then you can pick up the other two readings. We're talking about the poor being rescued. The poor are not rescued. Let's face it. If you look at the statistics of the world in which we live, you know, we in North America own about 80% of the world's goods and services, you know? Where are all those other so many billion people? Well, too bad. I'm all right, Jack. The poor are not being rescued. They really are not. Once we look at this carefully, the poor are not rescued. We look at section after section after section of the world, the Middle East, South America, Africa, not to mention all of the natural cataclysms, the earthquake in Iran and the floods in Russia, etc., etc. They're not going to be rescued. And the thought that the death of Jesus has altered much. The gift is not like the transgression. Or like the transgression of one, the many die. How much more did the grace of God, the gracious gift of the one man, Jesus, overflow for the men. That's not part of my conscience. I mean, I can read Paul. I teach courses in Paul. Even a course in the letter to the Romans. Yeah, but that's over. In other words, I think Chesterton's injunction is a very useful one. To look at these texts so they begin to look really weird, really implausible. That will not transform us, I don't think. But it will locate us in the reality of the world of the Scriptures, which is very different than the world we live in. Even the world of the church. I mean, think of all those bishops who said, everything that's said in secret is going to be published. Okay, Bernard Law, John Egan, McCarrick. Everything that you've said about Paul Shanley, Goethe, Gagan, and the 250 other priests who have resigned, the four bishops who have resigned. All that stuff is going to be made known. The church, often enough, is not helpful in making this stuff authentically implausible. So, I think this is an extraordinarily useful exercise. Go home today. Look at yourself. Look at your kids. Say, every hair on my head, every hair on my kid's head is numbered. And I am worth more than many sparrows. To move into that implausible, improbable world, closer to God, and I believe closer to each other.